It is Tuesday, March 26, 2013, broadcasting from the Carver Center for Public Radio. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Support for Ozarks at Large comes in part from the University of Arkansas's Women's Giving Circle.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, 3 million reasons strawberries may make a comeback in the middle part of the United States. What a donation to the University of Arkansas may mean for the future of the fruit. Plus, GOP gubernatorial hopeful Asa Hutchinson and an overview of theater for spring.
First, Arkansas lawmakers are still reviewing a proposal to provide a steel company with $125 million in state financing to build a $1.1 billion steel mill in Osceola. The legislature's Economic Development Committees convened a special meeting yesterday after two reports released by consultants last week offered mixed options of the costs and benefits of the Big River Steel project. In an interview with Talk Business Arkansas, Grant Tenniel with the Arkansas Economic Development Commission says the proposal has risks, but there are appropriate provisions in the deal to protect Arkansas.
The state has put appropriate clawback and penalty provisions into its agreement. So if everything goes badly in the marketplace, the mill is not likely to return everything it should to the state. But if the mill doesn't perform the way it's supposed to perform, then the state has the ability to ask for and receive its money back.
Tenniel says Big River Steel's plans to target growing areas of the steel market where there's demand in areas of the country where there's not as much supply is going to provide real opportunity.
Arkansas Republicans are vowing to override the governor's third veto of this legislative session. This latest veto is of a bill that would require Arkansas voters to show a valid photo ID before casting a ballot. Governor Mike Beebe, a Democrat, issued the veto yesterday after receiving information from the Attorney General's office that didn't conclude whether the bill is unconstitutional. The governor's spokesman, Matt DeCampbell, says it's a redundant law.
Well, there is the issue of legal uncertainty and not knowing how the courts would interpret the law under Article 3 of the Arkansas Constitution. They could very well say that it violates the Arkansas Constitution. But also, you've got a law that's addressing a problem that we think is already addressed with laws we currently have.
Republicans in the State House of Representatives issued a statement yesterday saying they are ready to override the veto. However, the override will start in the Senate, where Republican lawmakers also hold a majority. They could take up the issue later today.
Recent nationwide polls show a majority of Americans support the right by same-sex couples to marry. And as the Supreme Court takes up questions surrounding gay marriage this week, the latest numbers show Arkansas largely unchanged in its view on what many consider to be a civil right. Hendricks political science professor Jay Barth says recent polling done by the University of Arkansas provides the clearest evidence for how people in the state view the subject.
55% of Arkansans said there should be no legal recognition of a gay couple's relationship. There's been a little shift, but a majority have consistently been in that position since the question was first asked in 2005.
Barth points out, in addition to survey numbers, a widely supported 2004 referendum barring same-sex marriages in the state shows the firmness of many Arkansans' views.
No new shoreline use permits at Beaver Lake will be considered until October. That's the official word from the Army Corps of Engineers at the lake. The lake's chief ranger, Jared Trammell, says the deferral of new permits is a result of the budget crunch being felt by many divisions of the federal government. With a smaller budget, he says lake officials will be shifting some rangers who normally work in the Natural Resources Program, which manages the shoreline use permits, over to help with park support and campground management.
The reason for it is we haven't been able to hire summer park rangers to help out, which we normally hire every summer to kind of help with the campground side of things when parks open. Parks open April 1st, so with that coming out, we had to, of course, put that information out to where to let everybody know that we're not going to be accepting permit requests because we're not going to have the ranger staff to be able to support both programs fully through the summer months.
Permits affected by the personnel shift include permits for construction on new and existing boat docks, new paths to the shoreline, and new permits for mowing near the lake shore. Trammell says that the deferral of new shoreline use permits will have few noticeable impacts on normal lake use.
The only noticeable impact obviously would be the new docks that would get put on the lake. There may not be as many during the summer months, but once October gets here, we'll be looking at those permits. Additionally to that, we do have a backlog of existing permit requests that we have on file because we've had a low lake level. And so we haven't been able to work those. We have around 75 to 80 of those requests right now on hand. So we will continue to work those during the summer months as we can with our staff So there will be some new docks being permitted during this time. We're just not going to be able to take new requests.
As far as the lake level is concerned, this morning the water level at Beaver Lake registered at 1,114.5 feet above sea level, just under 6 feet below the seasonal average of 1,120.4 feet. Trammell says that the lake level is slowly rising as the area receives more scattered rain.
The jobless rates of the Northwest Arkansas and Fort Smith metro areas climbed in January. According to new numbers from the Federal Bureau of Labor Statistics, the unemployment rate in Northwest Arkansas increased by 0.8% from December to January, resulting in an unemployment rate of 5.9%. While January's jobless rate is still lower than figures from January 2012, the figure represents nearly 14,000 unemployed or underemployed persons in the four-county area, which saw a decrease of about 1,400 people from its overall labor force. The new numbers paint a slightly bleaker picture for the Fort Smith metro area. Its unemployment rate jumped a full percentage point to 8.7% in January. The new jobless figures show a 0.5% increase over figures from a year ago. Still yet, 11,500 people were unemployed during January in the Fort Smith metro.
After serving for 13 years as head of the Fay Jones School of Architecture at the University of Arkansas, Dean Jeff Shannon has announced his resignation effective May 15th. Following his resignation, Shannon will return to the classroom, and he will begin teaching full-time in 2014. He will also continue as executive editor of the collaborative publishing venture between the School of Architecture and the University of Arkansas Press. Shannon is the fourth dean of the architecture school, and an interim dean will soon be named.
The director of the Arkansas United Community Coalition is one of 11 individuals being recognized today at the White House as a Cesar Chavez Champion of Change. Medea Reith was honored at a ceremony this morning at the White House for her commitment and compassion for diversity. Among her other accomplishments, she is the youngest person appointed to the Arkansas State Board of Education.
The Arkansas gymnastics team will compete in the Oregon State NCAA Regional April 4th. Arkansas is ranked 16th in the country and is the number 3 seed at the meet in Corvallis. Other teams at the meet will include the top seed Georgia and number 2 seed Oregon State. The pairings were announced yesterday.
If March Madness has you itching to practice your hoop skills this week, then you'll have to go somewhere besides the Jones Center in Springdale for practice. The Jones Center announced yesterday that the courts will be closed through Friday as the courts are being resurfaced. The courts are scheduled to reopen, new floors and all, on Saturday, March 30th.
Clear, lows in the lower to mid-20s in northwest Arkansas. It is spring, and mostly clear with lows from the mid to upper 20s in the Arkansas River Valley. Sunshine tomorrow, highs will be around 55 in northwest Arkansas. Sunshine tomorrow for the Arkansas River Valley, highs close to 60. And for tomorrow night, partly cloudy, slightly warmer. Lows around 35 across northwest Arkansas. Lows will be around 40 in the Arkansas River Valley. This is Ozarks at Large. You know the strawberries you buy at local farmers markets are grown near you, but what about the berries you buy elsewhere? Chances are those strawberries were grown in California, Florida, or Mexico. The overwhelming majority of the 2.3 billion pounds of strawberries grown in the U.S. in 2011 came from a handful of counties in California or Florida. But a $3 million donation from the Walmart Foundation to the University of Arkansas System Division of Agriculture is designed to be a research seed to boost strawberry production in the middle of the country.
Well, Arkansas has a long history of strawberry production. In fact, a white county and Bald Knob used to be consider itself one of the strawberry capitals of the United States.
Kurt Rome is a professor of horticulture at the University of Arkansas and a co-director of the Center for Agricultural and Rural Sustainability. The center will manage a national grants program charged with awarding money from the donation to public universities with programs designed to improve strawberry growth in the places like Arkansas. Arkansas did consider itself a champion of the strawberry industry once. In fact, the University of Arkansas had a strawberry breeding program, but Kurt Rome says it was discontinued more than 20 years ago. He says the strawberry production system in Arkansas was a perennial cropping system.
So you'd plant strawberries and you'd cultivate them and you'd grow them as a continuous crop that might last 6 to 9 years. But in the 1980s, some new technologies came up. They were developed mostly on the West Coast, and it was based on some entire new genetics for strawberries. Strawberries only flower once a year. The traditional strawberry only flowers once a year, and therefore it would only produce in the spring for a very short period of maybe 3 or 4 weeks. There was some breakthrough in genetics, which allowed strawberries to be continually flowering, continuously blooming, so therefore continuously cropping.
So those new genetic findings led to an annual culture. Strawberries grown in plastic and high-density rows. The planting was in the fall, and the cropping began when temperatures were appropriate and would last until temperatures became too hot. This new system produced about 100,000 pounds of strawberries per acre compared to the older method that produced only between 10 and 15,000 pounds per acre. The conditions best suited for the new system are primarily met in only a few counties in California and Florida. Arkansas and other strawberry-producing states in the middle of America couldn't compete.
So what happened in Arkansas and the majority of the United States where we had traditional strawberry industries, all of a sudden they just disappeared as these large commercial industries in California and Florida blossomed.
The $3 million from the Walmart Foundation is intended to aid in bringing back the strawberry to places it had been flourishing. More strawberries grown in the interior of the country can lead to a more sustainable industry. Kurt Rome says since almost all of U.S. strawberries come from the edges of the continent, there are problems getting the fruit from field to grocery shelf.
There are industry standards that say that the average strawberry travels somewhere between 2,500 and 3,000 miles from the farm to the kitchen table. And there's some other challenges in that because strawberries only survive maybe 7 to 10 days after they're harvested. When you spend the first 5 days of your life on a truck, by the time consumers get them, they might not be in very good quality or they don't last to consumers. And so that's another sustainability issue is the spoilage. There's a huge spoilage through the supply chain.
The Center for Agricultural and Rural Sustainability is seeking proposals from land-grant and public universities to increase strawberry production. Heather Frederick, project manager of this program, says the center wants to become partners with researchers who are conducting work aimed at a wide variety of growers.
Projects that we will be supporting, we hope that they affect growers of all sizes, not just the larger scale ones, but, you know, even farmers market producers, so they can bring more strawberries to the farmers markets or sell them to the grocery stores or even Walmart if they choose or another larger supermarket chain.
Kurt Rome, the co-director of the Center for Agriculture and Rural Sustainability, says the big question to be addressed is whether the strawberry can be reintroduced as a more local crop by adapting the technologies that are already known to exist.
So we're soliciting the best ideas from across the United States. And we're hoping that we can stimulate innovation, education, outreach, and really kind of technology transfer ways. So part of the kind of working hypothesis that the directors for the Center of Agriculture Rural Sustainability, Heather and I have, is that a lot of the technology to grow strawberries exists. It's been studied at universities across the United States, but it's not been moved from the laboratory and the research farm to the production field. So the goal of this project is to give grants to land-grant universities and state-supported public universities to do that technology transfer, to see if we can actually move known technology and stimulate additional innovation and moving that from university into producers' fields.
If this works for strawberries, he says, maybe similar programs could be developed for tomatoes or peaches to help farmers make those crops more sustainable as well. That word, sustainable, applies to many of the facets of this program, from the shorter transportation routes required to get the fruit to consumers to the ability of farmers to make a living.
And we want it to be socially sustainable. So we hope to have impact on families and communities in very positive ways.
And even for people who don't eat strawberries or grow them, Heather Frederick, the project manager, says the mere existence of the program helps ignite conversations about food origins and how food is grown.
This absolutely plays into knowing where your food comes from, knowing how far it's traveled, whether it's, you know, from 3,000 miles away or 300 or just 30, you know. It's being able to make decisions informed. It's being able to make informed decisions.
The first grants are expected to be announced in May, the month that is, as it turns out, recognized as National Strawberry Month. You can learn more about the project at strawberry.uark.edu.
Amid the debate on gun violence, some epidemiology. If you're white and died by gunfire, you likely lived in a rural area, opposed strict gun control, and committed suicide. If you're black and died by the gun, you were likely shot by someone else, lived in an urban area, and supported gun control. I'm Neil Conan. Race, class, gun deaths, and gun policy. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation this afternoon at 1 on KUAF.
Asa Hutchinson, who lost his bid for governor in 2006, is seeking the job again in 2014. Last week, the one-time congressman talked to Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas about his reasons for running for public office. His resume includes not just his time in the U.S. House, but a tenure as a United States attorney and undersecretary in the Department of Homeland Security, and a three-time candidate for statewide office. Roby Brock asked him why, after losing those three previous races for statewide office, he's seeking the governor's job in 2014.
Well, it's a different state. I mean, Arkansas has changed its politics. I joke that ASA hasn't changed, but the state's changed. And obviously, it's an open race instead of a very strong candidate. Mike Beebe has done a very good job in managing this state as governor. He's very popular as attorney general, a long career here in Arkansas politics, a very formidable opponent, obviously. But I think what it manifests is a consistent desire on my part and a commitment of my wife Susan and I for the state of Arkansas. We left Washington for a good reason. We wanted to come back, build our future here in this state, and continue to contribute to this state and to build it to make it the great place that it is and can be better for our children.
I don't have to tell you, Governor Mike Beebe enjoys very strong job approval ratings, very strong favorable ratings. Are you part of the 98% that believes he has done a good job as governor? How do you rank his performance as governor?
Well, there's always areas that you would disagree and you'd do differently, but by and large, the first responsibility of a governor is to manage the state. And he has managed the state, from a financial standpoint, from a leadership standpoint. So there's some things I've disagreed, a lot that I've agreed with him on. I think we should applaud his efforts. I think we'll talk about the Big River Steel Project. That's one example where he's leaned forward and trying to bring jobs to this state.
Let's talk about you've got a primary opponent. Curtis Coleman has announced that he's going to seek the GOP nomination. There could be others. Curtis Coleman, a little bit more aligned with the Tea Party conservatives in the state of Arkansas. I think people would perhaps bookend you in as an establishment Republican. You've paid your dues for a number of decades here. You mentioned that the state's different. How do you think a Republican primary is going to be different now in terms of the type of voter that comes out, and do you appeal to that base?
Well, let's look back at my career, first of all. I engaged with the Republican Party when we were extreme minority in this state, believing that a two-party system is helpful. And I think going back to Governor Clinton, I don't think many people would consider me the establishment. I've been fighting for change in Arkansas for really decades. And that desire for positive change really continues. But when you look at competing in a Republican primary, we feel comfortable where we are. I think the question is do you have the right values for this state and can you win in November? And I think you look at those two questions, I think that they will answer that we have the right values and we got the best chance to win in November.
Are you expecting anybody else to get into the GOP primary on the primary side? And regardless of that, are you anticipating a series of debates? How are you going to kind of maybe campaign in that respect?
Well, one, it's very early. I'd just soon all of this be put off another year and still leave a year to campaign. But that's the nature of politics these days. You have to start early in fundraising and every aspect. It's wide open. There could be others that will jump in. I do not desire to have a bitter Republican primary. I don't think we will. I want to have a campaign about ideas. So we'll see how the field develops, but it's very unusual because it's an open seat. We don't have an incumbent governor that's running. So there's a lot of interest in it. It impacts our state. we're going to, obviously, we've always debated, and so that's the nature of campaigns, and it's important for the candidates to stand side by side and to hear them talk about the issues.
You are the designated front runner in this race. Our Talk Business poll shows you leading Bill Halter, 47-31%, shows you leading a hypothetical Mike Ross who may get in the race, 43-38%. Asa Hutchinson in front runner, not always put in the same sentence.
I don't even know how to act. I've never been in that position before. Perhaps when I ran for Congress the first time and got elected. But, you know, polls I'm used to, and they're sort of dreadful in the sense that the media really likes to cover polls and fundraising, probably the two most unpleasant parts of politics. I wish they'd measure you more carefully on the issues and some of those things. But we're pleased with that, particularly whenever I've been in the private sector for the last 6 years. I've been running businesses, my law practice, and so I haven't been in the public eye. And so to be in this position early on is gratifying. I think it reflects some reservoir of goodwill across the state that we've generated through decades of service.
Let's talk about some issues. Bill Halter was on this show just last week, rolled out the Arkansas Promise, basically a college education plan. If you make a 2.5 grade point average, you get tuition paid at an Arkansas school. Do you support that proposal?
Well, first of all, I applaud him for a serious policy initiative. I read it, and it's creative. Obviously addresses a problem and a challenge that we have. And so those are the kind of issue discussions that we ought to welcome in a campaign. As far as supporting it, we've got a challenge with our young people and obviously bringing them to a four-year college or a two-year college, encouraging graduation rates, and then the costs of it. Is this solution? I have some hesitancy about the cost of it and embarking on a expansion of the lottery scholarship that's already shaky, I would say, and the legislature's having to scale back the scholarships based upon that. So I think we have to look at it very carefully. We do want to address the concern about college graduation rates. We want to look at the costs of it. So we welcome the debate on that. I applaud him for that initiative.
But you're down as a maybe right now. So
well, I'm not a maybe in support of it, but he's addressing a serious problem, and we need to come up with a plan that encourages work. It does encourage responsibility with our young people as well. I went to college on a student loan that was government guaranteed, and I paid it back over the course of years, and I worked part-time through college, and our students are willing to do that, and we also want to look at our colleges to make sure that they're doing what they can to keep tuition rates low. Does the plan that Mr. Halter proposed accomplish all of that? We want to make sure that we follow those values and that we don't increase the debt, an unknown debt for the future that will be the next generation's responsibility.
A big subject we could spend half a day talking about. Let's talk about the steel mill super project. You just saw Grant Tenniel on set just before our segment here. 525 jobs, $1.1 billion project, requires some state incentives and initiatives to get this off the ground. Do you think that that is the type of project you would try to recruit as governor of the state of Arkansas?
Oh, absolutely. That's a project that creates high-paying jobs, obviously in the Delta region of the state that needs jobs, and it's in a industry that has a good growth potential. It's in manufacturing, and we need to expand our manufacturing base in Arkansas. You look at Fort Smith, where I spent 19 years. They've lost Whirlpool. They've lost manufacturing jobs, so we look for opportunities to bring them back. But any investment like this, the legislature is doing the right thing, having a due diligence review. Let's see that if the promises can be kept of creation of 500 jobs, 75,000, if there's a reasonable return on the investment for the taxpayers of Arkansas. We have to be able to accept some risk, but it needs to be a thought out risk, and we share it with the equity holders as well.
Let's talk about health insurance. We've seen a big debate up at the legislature about taking basically Medicaid money, using it in a private health insurance exchange that is part of the Obamacare plan. Do you like the direction that debate is moving? Do you think that that is going to be a problem solver?
Well, the challenge is that either way, whether you take the Medicaid expansion or the private sector or the insurance exchange option, you're still talking about a lot of money, a lot of taxpayers' money. but it is expanding health care, which is consistent with what the Supreme Court has said needs to be done under Obamacare. So I like the direction of the debate because it's looking at a novel way to take the expansion of health care, which is our responsibility now, but doing it with some private sector options, which is the private insurance exchange. Obviously, we need to, the legislature and the governor needs to continue to negotiate this, to fine-tune that, to see what the risks are to Arkansas, but I much prefer combining a private sector equation in this solution versus simply a government solution.
We got about 60 seconds left. What else do you want to bring to the forefront in terms of policy as governor?
Well, there's a lot. I mean, when you talk about job creation, which is critical, and by the way, on the Big River Steel Project, we're all looking for a way to support that. I think the legislature wants to approve that project, but we've got some questions that still need to be answered. We got to expand on that, and it's entrepreneurs in our state that create the jobs. We need to have a climate that entrepreneurs can produce those kind of jobs that have made us grow as a state. So it's certainly our tax competitiveness with other states in the surrounding region. It's our pursuit of super projects. It's our increasing opportunities in education.
Roby Brock talked to Asa Hutchinson last week. You can hear more at talkbusiness.net. Support for talkbusiness.net on Ozarks at Large is provided by Mitchell Williams Law, providing strategic counsel on a variety of sophisticated legal matters since 1954. Mitchell Williams Law Firm combines decades of diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Today, the firm employs nearly 80 attorneys from four offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. Online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com.
And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at BankOzarks.com. And the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. More at AECC.com.
It is Tuesday, March 26, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
We are pleased to have Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers, with us.
Going on Wednesday.
Yes.
Ben Rector, who is a one-time Fayetteville resident, mm-hmm. and has been touring with the likes of Need to Breathe, is back for a pair of headlining dates Wednesday and Thursday at George's Majestic Lounge. Both shows start at 9 o'clock, and the featured opening act is Alpha Rev. Tickets are $18.
Two-night run. That's fun.
Mm-hmm. And that's our big thing for Wednesday.
Okay.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor for Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. Recently, the Arkansas legislature voted to reduce the amount of training required of those who teach the history of the state in public schools. Here to talk about it is our resident history doctor, Bill Smith. Bill, welcome.
Glad to be here.
This is a little bit different for you to come in and talk politics.
It is, but this is a matter that you'd expect would be close to my heart.
What the House and Senate approved at the Capitol was House Bill 1262, and it's changing the requirement for 2 hours of training each 2 years into each 4 years.
I can only suppose that the defensive coordinator or the JV coach at someone's home district couldn't be bothered to leave voluntary workouts in the summer long enough to attend the training.
Well, the theme for many in the legislature this winter has been reducing government.
You know, and I can support the idea of trimming waste in hard budget times, but this is a watering down of standards. The reason the legislature, many legislatures, require the teaching of a state's history, not just Arkansas's, is to promote a sense of place, a sense of appreciation, a knowledge of where the state fits within the nation.
All right, I think I know your answer to this, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Why is any of that important?
Pride and remembrance, pure and simple. The people of Northwest Arkansas in particular should remember that Charleston, or Fayetteville, you know, there's your own little historical Civil War going on there, mm-hmm. were one of them was the first public school in the South to voluntarily desegregate after Brown versus Board in 1957. At the same time, with that pride in knowing that you stepped forward and you didn't have to have Bull Connor and the fire hoses to get your schools to desegregate, you know, they also need to remember the unseemly past as well in that remembrance, the Brooks-Baxter War, the Little Rock Nine, Orville Faubus. I'm not going to mislead and say that there isn't a certain amount of cultural boosterism involved in state history, but it is also true that a people without a past are a people without a future.
So these events that you're talking about.
Well, in full disclosure, I will tell you that I was a speaker at one of these a couple of years ago in Van Buren, and this one focused on the Civil War period. I gave my one solid original research paper in this area. I did some work on guerrilla warfare in North Louisiana and South Arkansas, but I expanded it into a talk about how new media, specifically Twitter, can become a dynamic teaching tool in this 150th anniversary of the conflict.
How Twitter and the American Civil War can coexist.
Exactly. The Washington Post was just beginning to do live coverage of the war, as if they had a series of reporters on both sides of the battlefield and from different perspectives. This was brilliant work on their part. It's continuing today if you want to go look at them. They would have a Twitter feed as if it was from soldiers on each side of the line, from the commanders, from the official governments, from citizens, doing it all with the journals and the histories that were from the period to make the past come alive.
That's what it sounds like. The history is coming alive.
Exactly. It's making history relevant to a new generation. It's going to put a little real history into, you know, an entertainment kind of mode.
Okay, but the bill passed both chambers. So now instead of every 2 years, it's every 4 years. This is spilled milk?
It is in some way, but here's my fear and the fear of many in the history community is the next step will be removing Arkansas history from the required curriculum, just like geography was a while back, as we kind of continue to water down within the state. The concept of social studies can just be everything in one basket.
Except, you know, when I went through Arkansas schools, and there is this sort of, I don't know if it's still taught like this, but there was even this sort of Arkansas exceptionalism taught, which I know people who didn't go to school in Arkansas say, really? There was Arkansas exceptionalism? But we were taught many things. I find it hard to believe that Arkansas history would be removed from the curriculum.
You know, you would think that something as basic as geography wouldn't have been removed either. And a lot of the pressure is to give more flexibility curriculum. So, you know that history thing? That's boring. That's not interesting. What you hope and what will help it cling is that very boosterism angle that, well, you know, but I'm going to go back to my point. You can't just remember the beauty of a Sam Walton and what he did with the Walmart miracle. You have to balance that against other issues that are related to the business community in the state. You can't just have your happy history without having all the history.
Not talk about slavery or whatever.
Exactly. And that's sort of the whole angle in this to me. This isn't about requiring teachers to do something. This is about a matter of professional licensure on continuing education within a field. You wouldn't tell public safety or healthcare workers that they could skip until 4 years from now a refresher on how to present their specific material.
Right.
These events encourage junior high and high school students to remain engaged in digging into our state history, to present papers and findings, and that just took a serious blow. Let me be careful and clear here. I support the idea of teacher training, but if the legislature is going to head down that road, and if it was all about trying to get government out of people's business, then they might as well lift the restrictions on all the certification that happens in the state. I can walk into any college or university in the state of Arkansas and be fully qualified to teach history based upon my professional degrees and work, but I cannot teach in a K-12 school without going through a minimum of 2 additional years of classwork on educational practice and theory. Think that through for a second. A subject matter expert at the postgraduate level cannot work in certain schools. No matter how those are certified, they don't have to keep up their subject matter expertise, yet they're allowed to continue to teach as much. You know, H.L. Mencken wrote of Arkansas in the early 20th century that it was the worst state in America. The legislature then voted to pray for his soul in 1931. I guess by 2031, we will simply let that fact slip down the memory hole as well. I'm just very frustrated. I know you can tell that.
Yes, yes, I can.
But the ones that see this as regulatory relief are being more Orwellian than they think. Let us not forget the words of 1984. He who controls the present controls the past, and he who controls the past controls the future.
Well, until the History Channel decides to replace Ice Road Truckers with Tom Dillard Presents,
we're history.
Brian Goldman was always a perfect student. A classmate of mine in high school once said that Brian Goldman would study for a blood test. Now that he's a doctor, he teaches med students. Many of them have that look in their eyes that they're pristine. They've never made a mistake, and they never will. Of course, until it happens.
Making mistakes. That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
The TED Radio Hour, Sunday at noon on KUAF 91.3 FM. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation.
This is Ozarks at Large. It's the final Tuesday of the month already. And this is the day each month we take some time to explore upcoming theater offerings in the region. The schedule includes Slam Bang, Door Slamming Mystery, two inventive musicals, Cole Porter, and another production of Steel Magnolias. And in a few minutes, we'll pay special attention to a drama set in 1964 Atlanta at the height of the Civil Rights Movement. Comments from the director of the 6th Annual Spring Production of the University of Arkansas Office of African and African American Studies just ahead. Fort Smith Little Theater will present Steel Magnolias, opening with a gala performance April 4th, more shows April 5th through the 13th. You can learn more at fslt.org. This weekend, Goodbye Charlie, a comedy about a reincarnated womanizer in a woman's body, is on stage at Rogers Little Theater. Performances this weekend and next are at 8 p.m. Thursday through Saturday nights and 2 for Sunday matinees. Tickets at rogerslittletheater.org. By the way, the next RLT production, Nora Ephron's Love, Loss, and What I Wore, will have auditions April 1st and 2nd. Doors will slam and situations will be confused when the Art Center of the Ozarks brings Neil Simon's farce Rumors to Springdale for weekend runs April 12th through the 14th and 19th and 20th. Members of New York City's upper class get themselves deeper and deeper into trouble when a dinner party steamrolls into chaos. More information at artcenteroftheozarks.org. There are musicals this spring. Walton Arts Center has The Elegance of Cole Porter in the national touring production of Anything Goes from April 9th through the 14th. Theater Square tackles the thoroughly modern musical Next to Normal April 18th through May 12th. The music of post-punk band Green Day inspires the touring production American Idiot at Walton Arts Center later in April. And the University of Arkansas Fort Smith Academy of the Arts will have their young company Singing in the Rain at Breedlove Auditorium the first weekend of May. We'll have more about each of those productions on Ozarks at Large in the coming weeks. Sager Creek Arts Center in Siloam Springs continues its return to performances on stage with Tender Lies the last weekend of April and the first weekend of May. You can find out more at the Sager Creek Facebook page. And the Ozark Arts Council will dust off the American classic Bus Stop in early May at the Lyric Theater in Harrison. Information available at thelyricharrison.org. That's thelyricharrison.org. And May will also bring A Mermaid to the Arts Live Theater stage in Fayetteville. The stage version, inspired by the Disney animated film, will be produced May 9th through the 12th. ArtsLiveTheater.com for times. And plenty of spring theater on the University of Arkansas campus. The main stage will be home to Stephen Sondheim's company beginning April 18th. The run will last through the 28th. Next week, Studio 404, a more intimate setting inside Kimple Hall, will host three free productions of Ibsen's masterpiece, A Doll's House. And Saturday and Sunday, April 6th and 7th, the 6th annual spring production from the University of Arkansas African and African American Studies program will be presented.
But we'll work spots today just because we have some spacing issues.
Okay.
And we'll figure it out. I know we have to meet in here again.
Last night, Clinicia Sibley, assistant professor of drama at the University of Arkansas, was working with her small cast in a small room. Because so many productions are in rehearsal the first days after spring break, finding space to practice on campus may require a night or two in a makeshift location. Last night, the cast and crew of Waiting to Be Invited snuggled inside the Office of African and African American Studies in office space on the edge of campus. Clanisha Sibley has four of her actors work and rework a pivotal scene when four African American women in 1964 Atlanta decide they can summon the courage to enter a whites-only department store.
I come out from work last Friday, about the last one to leave. My son looking half scared to death. My daughter hysterical when I got to him. My car all scratched up, dog marks on both sides. Ruth, they stick the dogs on my cherry.
The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. He leadeth me in the path.
Before the cast arrived last night, Clanisha Sibley, herself a playwright, sat down to talk about this sixth annual spring production from the African and African American Studies program.
It's wonderful because I teach African American theater history and dramatic literature. And so this is an interesting way to kind of explore my classroom material and to get my students to have unique opportunities to see this type of culturally specific theater. So I enjoy it. And I actually remember being a grad student and seeing some of the African American studies professors do a production of Ntozake Shange's play for Colored Girls. Mm-hmm. I can't remember what year that was, but that was the first time I saw this program being affiliated with that type of annual play or that type of initiative. And I said, if I ever hang around, I would love to sort of, you know, have that as, you know, a baby and to be able to nurture that initiative and to see it grow every year. So that was when I was a grad student here. And, you know, now sort of being the leader of this, it's wonderful. I love it.
She selects the script each year. This year's Waiting to Be Invited by S.M. Shepherd-Massat received the Kennedy Center's Roger L. Stevens Award for a work by a new playwright and earned Ms. Massat the Kennedy Award for Most Promising Young Dramatist. Clanisha says she considers a wide range of factors when she chooses a play for each spring.
We want to serve the African and African American studies students. We want to serve that group and allow them to be active participants in this initiative. But we also, because I am in the drama department, you know, I want to offer opportunities to students who are in that world. And then you have some of the drama majors and minors paired with the African and African American Studies program students. So you kind of think about the students that are going to be really drawn to this opportunity. And I find that it helped, that it informs the plays that I sort of select.
The cast, except for one actor, is made up of undergraduate students. Perhaps it's not quite accurate to say the civil rights events of the 1960s are ancient history to them, but certainly 1964 represents a different America. Clanisha Sibley says directing students is always a teaching opportunity, and she wants to nurture the artistic talents of her cast, she says, but she wants the annual spring production to tie into course material as well.
This is the first year we have someone serving in the role as dramaturg. So the research that he's been conducting has, you know, has been so vital to our process. And it helps the students to be able to put together those historical pieces or the information that they might be very removed from. But I've picked that up in last year's production. We did a play called The Colored Museum by George C. Wolfe. And we realized that we took a lot of time to establish character and a historical backdrop in our rehearsal process. Before we knew it, we had put so much time into trying to understand the material and what that material meant historically. So this year we created that role of the dramaturg and said, this is something that we need to have every year. We need to have a student, and there are so many students that are here for history that have that interest in either dramatic literature research or research related to African American history. So why not get that student who's specifically involved in that area to serve us in this way and just to continue to build on the knowledge that they're hungry for.
Clanisha, who is not that far removed from earning her own MFA, says she's learned a bit in the past few years, too. She says she used to have a desire to direct her own scripts.
I've learned a lot in the last few years about you know, being focused on a single artistic goal. But I do find that creating theater as a playwright and creating theater and moments as a director are significantly different.
Waiting to Be Invited will have two productions in the Arkansas Union Theater on the U of A campus, Saturday night, April 6th at 7:30, and Sunday afternoon, April 7th at 2:30. Saturday night will include a talk back with the audience to discuss the play. Clanisha Sibley says she expects that to be an interesting component of the weekend because she thinks this play will draw audience members from multiple generations.
And that's going to be the beauty of the talk back. That's how it was last year, too. We did a play that was, you know, different, that were different snippets of African American history. And so you had things that college students were relating to, you had things professors were relating to, community people were relating to. Everyone was relating. And when it came to having a conversation about these thematic elements or these plot elements in the play, you had opportunities for teaching moments for the young and old. So you're absolutely right. This is a meeting of generations, and I'm excited and thrilled that these college students have had the opportunity to go back into history, and it ultimately gives them a sense of pride about themselves and their current situation.
Clanisha Sibley is an assistant professor of theater at the University of Arkansas and the director of the 6th annual spring production sponsored by the University of Arkansas Office of African and African American Studies. Both performances are free and open to the public.
Tonight, Doug Stanhope's unique take on stand-up comedy can be viewed at the UARC Bowl on Dixon Street in Fayetteville. His performances include social commentary, rants, and the occasional alcohol-inspired observation. He is also known for his role as a suicidal comic on the FX program Louie. He was selected for the role by the show's creator, Louis C.K. Recently, Doug Stanhope told us he's okay with making people at his shows uncomfortable.
If people were open about their demons and whatnot, they wouldn't be taboos. You wouldn't have, like, drugs, for instance. Yeah, if people were open about their drug use, if your dad said, well, I get high occasionally, that doesn't bother me. And people were honest, didn't have to wait till they're, you know, in a dark corner to talk about things. You wouldn't have as many, you know, bad laws and poor moral compasses.
He says such controversial topics as drugs, politics, and sex could lead to interesting conversations. Maybe.
You'd hope, but that's not my initial intention. I don't go out there going, hey, I'm going to change society. I'm going to make drunk people laugh in a bar. I'm under no false illusion that I'm making a difference in the world.
Some of Doug Stanhope's stand-up performances have led to intense give-and-take sessions with audiences, and the comedian admits there have been times when people have felt offended, attempted to shout him down, or left the venue in anger. But, he says, as comics' routines and styles have become easier to access through YouTube and other online services, fewer people walk into one of his shows not understanding his kind of humor.
Well, I do miss the old days when I played comedy clubs where people would just show up to see whoever's on stage and, you know, destroying their bachelorette party because they did no research. But, you know, nowadays it's mostly people I know. And when you're spending decent money on a ticket, you'd hope that people do a bit of research. It's not like the old days. With the internet, you can spend 5 minutes and figure out what you're about to walk into before you buy the ticket.
Doug Stanhope will be on stage at the UARC Bowl in Fayetteville tonight, beginning at 8. You can find out more details about the show at uarcbowl.com. Doug Stanhope's page is dougstanhope.com.
KUAF's Spring On Air fundraiser begins Monday, April 1st, and we're looking for some challenges. This is KUAF station manager Rick Stockdale, and you can help us encourage listeners who have never contributed to KUAF before by contacting us today with your challenge grant. Call or email us with your name and the amount of your challenge. Then when the fundraiser starts on April 1st, we'll use your challenge to match the gifts of first-time donors. They'll be doubling their money to KUAF, and you can help us reach our goal of $160,000. If you'd like to make a challenge, call Molly at 575-7259 or email us at kuafinfo@uark.edu. Thanks a lot.
Washington Regional Foundation presents their 20th annual Washington Regional Gala, an evening with Cool and the Gang on Tuesday, April 2nd at Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville. More information available at 443-5600 or waltonartscenter.org. KUAF is supported by Northwest Arkansas Media, publishers of Northwest Arkansas Times, the Springdale and Rogers Morning News, Benton County Daily Record, and the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. These daily newspapers offer local, state, national, and international news, plus business and Razorback news. NWAOnline.com for more information.
A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Strawberry.
Yes, Strawberry, Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
And where there? Oh, this is one of those times when I'm going to start to talk and I don't quite know the answer.
Sure.
The Strawberry Festival that takes place every year in Oklahoma, just across the border from Fort Smith.
No idea.
It's not Westville. I'll hear. If you know,
across
let me know.
Across from Fort Smith?
Yeah. West of Fort Smith.
I have no idea.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
I'm sure someone knows, and you can email me at ozarksatlarge@gmail.com.
Yes.
How you doing with your brackets?
I am currently tied for first in my group of people.
Fantastic.
I don't know that that's saying much. As
so does that mean you knew that Florida Gulf Coast
exactly
would be in the Sweet
16?
Exactly.
No, okay. But nobody knew. So right. I think I tend to just, I pick a couple of upsets, but mostly I just stick to, you know, who's ranked highest.
I do know that one of the most watched programs on ESPN, mm-hmm. pardon the interruption, Michael Wilbon flirted with making Georgetown, New Mexico his final game.
Did he really?
He ultimately did have Georgetown in the finals, but he had New Mexico in the final four, so his bracket was wrecked from the first day.
I knew that the what conference is it? The bottom left bracket on my
yes.
when I fill
yes.
it out. I knew that one was going to be a mess.
Right.
I didn't know it was going to be that big of a mess.
Well, it's a mess for everybody.
You know, I picked Ohio State to come out of that mess of things, and it looks good now with everybody.
Yes, and they're still in.
Uh-huh.
Or as they're known by their alums, the Ohio State University.
The Ohio State.
Had an odd full circle sort of experience.
You did.
Earlier we had the story about the production of Waiting for an Invitation that'll be on stage on the University of Arkansas campus mm-hmm. the first weekend of April. And I mentioned in the story that for that night only, the rehearsal was inside the Office of African and African American Studies. It's in a converted apartment mm-hmm. that the university bought a few years ago, which is the apartment where I lived for 7 years. When I first started working at KUAF, I lived in this place.
That's awesome.
And to make it full circle,
uh-huh.
you know whose office it is?
I do, because you told me.
Yes. Mary Margaret Hoy, who is the daughter of
Susan and Anthony Hoy,
yes.
whose studio we are in currently.
Crazy.
The
Crazy
Anthony
how the universe
Susan
works.
Hoy news
yes.
studio. Yep.
Interesting. Let's see. Also tomorrow, TEDx.
Yes. Best
at
of
Walton
luck.
Center. Thank you. Thank you very much.
As you are speaking. One
yes.
of 12?
I believe so. Yes. I think there are 12 of us. But I'll be here in the morning and
sure.
we'll have the show on. Okay. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Thanks so much for listening.
Have a happy Tuesday.